Welcome to the Bridging Success Podcast. I'm Bo Jenkins, founder and CEO of BridgeNet Technology Consultants, where we solve challenging technology issues for growing businesses. We are the leading customer-focused, community-involved expert technology consultants. Welcome to Bridging Success, the podcast where top B2B CEOs and executives share their insights, challenges, and game-changing strategies that drive innovation and business success. I'm your host, Bo Jenkins, founder and CEO of BridgeNet Technology Consultants, where each episode we spotlight visionary leaders shaping the future, diving into critical decisions, leadership philosophies, and breakthrough moments that have propelled them to success. On this episode, I'm joined by John Morris. John is the founder and CEO of Physical Advocate, Inc., a technology-enabled professional services company empowered by Engine BI software. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here. It's great to be here.
Great. Tell us a little bit about your journey, John. Before you started Physical Advocate, Inc., what led up to that and what inspired you to be where you are today?
Sure. So I went to University of Chicago for business school, and I entered an annual business plan competition in 2004, took second place, won $10,000, and that became the seed money to start a company called Rise Interactive. I used that to create a data-driven digital marketing agency. I grew it from just me to one of the world's largest digital marketing agencies before exiting in 2020. And I stepped down in April of 2020, so right at the beginning of the pandemic. I had three young daughters. When you build a fairly sizable company, you dream about what you're going to do when you get to exit, and it generally involves an airplane, and for me, a golf course, and both were closed. So I didn't really know what I was going to do next. And in my last few years, I had a business coach, and every time I would meet with him, he said, "The insights you have are nothing I've ever seen. Like, you could create a business just by itself selling those insights." And I thought that would be a fun, cool thing to do if I could go help other entrepreneurs grow faster. And so what we really do is we leverage financial data to help mainly service-based companies improve their cash flow, their profit margins, and their year-over-year revenue growth. And it's all about how do we improve decision-making. And that was kind of the big success that allowed me to grow Rise Interactive. It's actually allowed me to grow Physical Advocate. We're up about 60% year-over-year. And then we do the same thing to help our clients.
That's great. Yeah, what a time to exit, right? April of 2020. Yep.
The only thing I'll say is I put the president in charge as the CEO, and what a horrible time to make someone a CEO. So let me put you in charge of a new company with a global pandemic.
We were all scratching our heads for a little while there.
Yeah.
Talk to me about, you mentioned that you had a knack for numbers and that your ideas from that business coach could become a business itself. It sounds like you used that knowledge to create Engine BI. Did Engine BI evolve out of Physical Advocate, or was it the other way around? Did you create Engine BI first and then form that into a business?
So they both happened really at the same time. Engine BI started as Google spreadsheets on steroids, and those became the prototypes. And so I would win new clients to help them manage their finances. And we would use these Google Sheets. And those sheets became more and more sophisticated. And then we productized it and built Engine BI. And you could really think of Engine BI as budgeting and forecasting software, business intelligence software, benchmarking software. And now we're adding an AI CFO component to it where it connects all that data, where you'll be able to ask questions and get answers and get insights faster and better than you'd ever could before.
This next question is selfish. I have an idea that I'm always toying around with what my next idea is. And I've got an idea for an app that I want to develop. Thinking about back to the transformation between Google Sheets and actually really launching a tangible product in Engine BI, what were some of the biggest challenges in getting that off the ground, getting it started?
So the first thing is you need to know how to build product and build technology. When I left Rise, I had a 25-person product development team. By the time a year ago, I think it was up to 50-plus people, so it expanded even beyond that left. And there's three major elements. So there are the engineers, there are the UX people, and then there are the product people. And the product people are basically, what should I build next that's going to have the greatest impact to our clients? The UX people are going to ask, how do I design this in a way that people love doing it? And then the engineers are, how do I build this so it actually works? And So if you want to get your application off the ground, my first suggestion is you have to budget for it and you have to put a team together that is completely dedicated, completely focused on building that application, and that you have an agile framework with great sprint cycles and development. And we have a full product development team that just focuses on Engine BI. At Rise, I had a product called Connects. And so that would be my first big thing is it's really hard to do if you're just doing it on the side, or if you have someone doing client work and does work on the side to build a product, it's got to be a dedicated team to make it happen.
I hear you talk about all those different components and the people side of things. And I think about the developments that I've seen in AI in just the last 3 months. And read an article this morning about a Vibe coder that created an app that he just sold to Wix for $80 million. How do you see AI changing that relationship in the future? If you peer into your crystal ball 5 years from now, how do those development teams change? What do you see happening with AI when it comes to Engine BI?
I'll give an example. One of the things that I required of my engineering team is that we have to constantly be pushing the envelope about what tools exist at AI to make development easier. So there's a tool called Cursor that's a very well-known tool in the development community, and my team is required to use that tool. We are looking at workflow automation and AI in terms of how we integrate it in terms of our entire way that we do work throughout the entire company. And what will happen is your speed of development is just going to become a lot faster, and which is an amazing thing. And there are now even things, I don't know the technical term of it, but there are prompt-based coders where they literally will, whether it's ChatGPT or a Cursor or some tool, they literally let the AI write all the code for them. And so it means a lot less technical people can start building products and technology, but I still think you're going to need, depending on what you're building, people that specialize in this, but they can leverage these tools to develop in a much faster way.
Yeah, that term was what I just called it. Vibe. It's called vibe coding. You
Okay, vibe
vibe
coding. Yep.
with the prompts and just let the AI do all the writing for you. And Cursor is the tool that I've seen evolve over the last 3 months. It's pretty mind-blowing. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Let's jump away from the tech for a minute. Tell me about some of the achievements or milestones at Physical Advocate that you've seen in the last 4 or 5 years that you're most proud of.
The first was launching Engine BI. So we launched it on March 15th of 2023. So that to me was a big milestone. There are really just cool features that have come out throughout the technology that I'm incredibly proud of. And then ultimately, I'm in business to help people. And I have a client that's about 15 million in revenue. Last year, they had a CFO. They were losing a ton of money. They were going into debt, or they had debt. Their debt was growing, and they followed our playbook. They're growing like a weed this year. They're making massive amounts of profits. They're starting to pay off down their debt. And just the impact I have to the CEO is he literally was losing sleep on a regular basis. He had no trust in the numbers. He had no understanding of what the next month was going to look like. They now have complete visibility. You could just feel the stress that has been relieved, and he's sleeping well at night. And to me, that's ultimately what it's about. When I was at Rise, I had a client of mine that was Fortune 13. And at Rise, we were dealing with some of the largest companies in the world. And the work we were doing was amazing. The results and the were amazing. The people we were working with were amazing. The amount we were paid was amazing. Like, I have zero complaints about this client. However, if a new CEO came in and not only decided to fire Rise, but decided to stop in its entirety what we were doing for them, I believe that they would have gone from Fortune 13 to Fortune 13. The impact was pretty insignificant. When I work predominantly with $10 million, $100 million service-based companies, I'm generally dealing with the owners. I'm generally dealing with their leadership team. I'm generally tackling two problems. Problem number one is they are in financial distress. They got major cash issues and they need a turnaround situation, and we help them figure out how to do that. The second one is they hit a plateau. They got up to $30 million in revenue, and all of a sudden they just stopped growing and they don't know why. And because we know exactly how much they should spend in every single area of their business, how it should be organized, how they should categorize their expenses and their finances, I can almost instantly tell them the problem. And so working with them, I can put them back on a path to growth. That creates enterprise value for them. It creates careers for their employees. Just, I feel so much more reward like working with this group of people.
You talk about you can show them where to invest. And some of what I read, you talk about investing a quarter of your revenue in R&D and automation and AI. Talk to me a little bit about that metric and how that
So that's actually how much I spend. I actually recommend my clients only spend about 5% in R&D. So I'm way overspending in the R&D side relative to what I recommend. But it starts with gross margin, how profitably you service your customers. And you'd be amazed if you're selling drinks at a bar for a living and you don't measure how much you pour, like you could be like losing a lot of profitability. When you sell time and you're not measuring it properly, you might be delivering for customers in a lot less profitable manner than you should. And so the first big key ingredient we talk about is understanding how to service your customers, ideally at a 50% gross margin. That helps fund your R&D and that helps fund your sales and marketing. And so in our scenario, we have great gross margins that allow me to invest very heavily in R&D and allows me to invest in sales and marketing, which is what fuels my growth. And the reason why I'm such a big believer investing in R&D and innovation is the service-based sector, which is predominantly who I help, is a very saturated, crowded space. For every law firm, architect, engineer, marketing agency, tech service provider, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of companies that could do the exact same thing. And so if you're not investing in differentiation and something that makes you unique, then you're generally going to be negotiating on price. And so your profit margins are going to get squeezed. And so one of the big reasons why I like investing so much in innovation is I really believe that your number one sales goal is never lose a client due to performance. If you lose a client because, you know, there was a leadership change, there was an M&A event, like there's something beyond your control, like that's great. But if you lose a client because you got out innovated, you screwed up somehow, those are the things that you have to learn from and improve and get better. And you got to invest in that innovation side. And then the other part is, I used to laugh when I was at Rise because a lot of people would ask me, like, how did you grow so quickly? And I would explain that as a percent of revenue, I spent more in sales and marketing than I think anybody in the entire industry. And I was like, how come as a marketer, I'm the only marketer that believes in marketing? And I don't want my clients to be the best kept secret. I want them to be the best well-known brand for whoever they're trying to serve.
That 25% level investment that you say you're making, what's the biggest advancement that you've seen come from that?
One of the biggest initiatives we had right now. So once again, it's budgeting and forecasting software. And we now completely connect with QuickBooks. We can pull in your data. We have all sorts of different attributes in our system that like substantially more attributes than you have in QuickBooks. So you can match all your transactions at a really granular level. You can do formulas just like you can in Microsoft Excel or Google Sheets within the technology. And then the big thing we're working on now is thinking of it as like ChatGPT connected to our proprietary data set, where you basically have an AI CFO that can give you insights 24/7. They have much more knowledge, much more information than a typical human would have. It never sleeps. It doesn't quit on you. There's all sorts of huge advantages. So that's our big initiative that we're working on at this moment.
That's exciting stuff. What, at that level of investment, what warning signs do you look out for to prevent over-engineering, to prevent waste, to keep track that it's that level of investment is paying off and doing what you need it to do for you?
So at the end of the day, what I tell people when it comes to innovation is it is a math equation. What number are you trying to improve? Are you going to win more customers because you're going to have a higher win rate? Are you going to reduce churn and make it more difficult for someone to leave? Are you going to improve your gross margin? So like you really got to think about the number you're trying to improve. In our scenario, as I said, my number one sales goal is never lose a client due to performance. I'll just give an example. I mentioned the formulas in Microsoft Excel, and we have something else called Sandbox. And what Sandbox does is it allows you to test different assumptions without going into the budgeting software, and then you could hit apply and apply those things. Those were two things that were absolutely crucial to a bunch of our clients. And so I'm focusing on not losing clients as my main goal. And so knowing how important it was, we prioritize that. Knowing that the world is headed towards an AI-driven CFO and wants to move away from reports and more through a conversation type analysis, that became a big part of our product roadmap. And so I would say our number one driver is reduce churn and make it so that we're sticky and so that people don't leave. I'm pretty good at sales, and so I can talk to prospective clients. If I can get them on the platform, I feel pretty confident that they'll stay on the platform.
Speaking of the platform, I haven't seen it, but I have to imagine that it has some dashboards, some widgets in it. What's your favorite widget in Engine BI? What do you like to watch?
So there's a report called the Financial Tracker. And basically, think of the income statement as different groups like revenue, cost of service, gross margin, and all these different elements. And what it allows you to do is you can dive into any one of those and see how your actuals are, what your original budget was, how you did last year, what your forecast was, your revised forecast. And so it allows you to just compare a whole bunch of information. You could do that for revenue, you could do it for cost of service, you could do it for your gross margin, your EBITDA. And it's honestly the way I ran Rise. Like this was the way that I used the information. And if you know how to read that report, it tells you really quickly, hey, revenue is going to be down next month. What's my cost going to look like? And if I look at that, I'm like, oh crap, like my expenses might be too high. I might have to have a plan for adjusting my expenses. Or revenue is growing tremendously in the next 90 days, but my cost of service hasn't ramped up. I better start hiring people to make sure I can support that revenue. So that's probably my favorite report. We also have something called waterfall reports. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but it shows you like at a starting period and an ending period. I'll give you an example. A revenue waterfall will show you what your original plan was and what your revised plan is. And then it'll show you the difference, how much more new business you're going to win. This is how many people left you. This is how many people who beat you up on price, who reduced services. This is how many upsells you had. And so you could see the bridge to what you get through. But we have waterfall reports for revenue, for SG&A, for cost of service, a whole bunch of different areas.
Kind of like forecasting with a little bit of history mixed into it, it sounds like.
It allows you to see like what the deltas were. So if you ever ask the question, I was like, why is this different than what we originally thought we were going to do? It categorizes it and then it allows you to get into the actual granular detail. For example, if your expenses are up from last year and you want to see why are they up from last year, you can literally get into marketing I'm spending more on. And then you could drill down and be like, okay, I actually hired three more people. And you could see how much you paid for each person. And then you could see the things you stopped spending money on. And so at the end of the day, as I said, there's only three decisions I care about. It's how much cash you have relative to monthly overhead, your profit margin, and your year-over-year revenue growth. And by diving into these reports and these insights, you can get to those answers much faster to figure out what decisions I need to make.
So, you're doing a lot of number crunching, data analytics. What do you see? How do you see the role of data analytics evolving over the next 5 years, 10 years out?
I really see the combination of connecting data to different AI platforms. If you think about, in a way, what I've talked about with my AI CFO is it's very similar to ChatGPT. The only difference is I have a proprietary data set and I'm working on very specific questions to solve cash profit margin and revenue growth. And so I really believe that's the same with everybody. I'll give you a really good example. Google Analytics came out with an AI feature where you can now ask it questions rather than having to look at the reports. The problem with that is Google Analytics doesn't connect to all of your data sources to really get to the why of something. So if I asked it a question of, is my traffic down last month from the previous month? It could say yes or no. So let's just say the answer is yes, your traffic is down 40%. And then I want to get into the why. It'll be like this page has less traffic. But it might not be able to say the click-through rate from this campaign that you're doing that we don't have the data on plummeted. And that's why your traffic is down. And so you need that extra level of detail and that extra level of data in order for you to be able to answer those questions. And so by having access to your actuals, your payroll data, your tax data, your budgeting and forecasting data, if you think about all that data and it connects to some AI agent, now you can get into the details of why something happened. And so that's where I see the data-driven approach heading in the future.
Data consolidation using AI or using your own individual language model for your business.
Yep.
I like that. I like that. Math has been around for a really long time. How do you stay ahead of the curve in your field? What innovations are you most excited about and what keeps you excited?
When I think about the problem that I'm trying to solve, it's honestly, I'm trying to answer questions by getting into granular level detail that nobody else can answer. But the challenge is, I'm just going to use access to data. So when I think about accounting platforms, I have clients on QuickBooks, NetSuite, Intacct, the list goes on and on. And then there's different payroll providers, and then there's different CRMs, and then there's different resource planning tools, and then there's different project management tools. And typically, when you build data connections, you build API connections to all these different sources. API connections are time consuming and they're expensive to maintain. And so, one of the biggest things that I'm spending time thinking about is how do you connect to these different data sources? How can you do it at a lower cost? How can you do it more efficiently? Because that's how you can bring in everything in to be much more effective at how you're looking at doing things.
That's a great point. Love that. Anything new you're working on? Any projects that you or new initiatives that you can share that are coming next, maybe for Engine BI?
That was the AI CFO that I was talking about. That's the newest thing that we're working on that should be coming up within Q3.
Q3. What's your biggest roadblock to pushing that forward? What might set you back?
You're dependent on the ChatGPTs, the Claudes, the Geminis of the world, and the answers have to be good. You know what I'm saying? So if you sit there and you ask a question, I might give it all the data. I'll give you a real live example. In my initial prototyping, I created three fake clients, Alpha, Beta, and Sigma were the names of the clients.
Right.
And I loaded it into ChatGPT and I just asked one question: how many clients do I have and what are the names of them? And the answer was like Alpha, Beta, Delta, Gamma. It just started giving me like the Greek alphabet. And so, in order for this to work, the questions have to be accurate and it's got to be able to read the data really well. And as we are going through this, we have a list of about 1,000 questions that we're sitting there looking at the answers to. And I'd be like, are those good answers? And some of those are just really simple questions like, here's a report that I uploaded, or here's data from my database. Just make sure you give me the answer correctly. The other ones are from my knowledge base of like information that I wanted to say, is this the right answer or not the right answer? Because otherwise, it's not going to be a valuable tool.
I hear that a lot. You actually alluded to it earlier in the podcast when you said that business owner had lost confidence in the numbers and you
Yeah.
can restore that confidence. If you then deploy an AI CFO that causes that confidence to be shattered because it's hallucinating all the time,
Exactly.
I could see it
And that's
falling
actually
flat.
what the word my president uses is that ChatGPT tends to hallucinate quite a bit.
Yeah, the other side of that is that I hear that even with AI, we're always going to have humans to verify the data. But I think that'll
Yep.
get better and better. I feel like.
That's my approach also is I will be continually looking at how we look at the results of what people ask and how we get the results to be better and better. And I'm really specifically focused on the service-based industry and questions about cash, profit margin, and revenue growth. And that's like my whole universe. And there's a lot of questions to answer just within that universe.
John, I really appreciate it. If there's one key takeaway that you'd like our listeners to walk away with today or to remember, what would it be?
I think it was a client due to performance that you need to make sure that you are constantly innovating, constantly getting better. And if you deeply care about results, your business will grow. But if you have a leaky bucket because you don't take care of your customers, it's really hard to grow a business.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, for those who want to learn more about Physical Advocate Inc. or connect with you, what's the best way for them to reach out and find you?
They can follow me on LinkedIn. I post content constantly. You can go to fiscaladvocate.com or you can always email me at jon@fiscaladvocate.com.
JON@fiscaladvocate.com. John, thanks so much for your time. I really enjoyed it.
This was great. Thanks both for having me here.
All right. This is Bo. Thank you so much for listening to the Bridging Success Podcast. If you are a successful business owner who would like to be on this program, please visit podcast.bridgenetllc.com to sign up. If something in this episode connected with you, would you mind sharing it on social media? Just take a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or share it on your favorite social media platform. If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on social media with the hashtag #BridgingSuccess and let them know about the show. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, your ratings, and reviews, they go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to our website, bridgenetllc.com, or follow me on LinkedIn. Find me on Facebook at /BJakins or on Instagram at BoJakins. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.